The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland State Mortgage Late, Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner. Last month, we traveled to the U.S. Social Forum in Detroit, where we met with some 18,000 activists who gathered there to learn about campaigns for change happening across America. You're about to hear an interview with a member of the Beehive Collective, an innovative group of artists and activists that creates large graphic representations of social justice struggles. I came across their drawing, The True Cost of Coal, who stood about 20 feet wide and 10 feet tall, and interviewed Aaron, a new member of their collective, about the painstaking process of research, gathering stories, and drawing that goes into their work. To follow along as Aaron explains the poster, visit www.steinershow.org and click on the Beehive Collective podcast for a view of the drawing. Enjoy.
My name is Aaron, and I'm with the Beehive Design Collective.
The Beehive Design Collective?
Yes.
Which is?
Beehive Design Collective, here comes our, like, mission statement. We are an all-volunteer organization of artists, activists, educators, and organizers. And what we do is we work collaboratively to make these large-scale graphics that explain politics visually. And, like, that's, like, the wordy version. But for me, it's, like, what... I don't know about you, but I have always felt that sometimes the way that we're taught in school is boring. And sometimes I feel like the way that the news communicates information perhaps doesn't always communicate everything you need to know. Because usually whatever is happening is actually been happening for 100 years, and there's incredible amounts of history leading up to what's going on. So we give a visual context and a way for people to learn that's more visually appealing and interesting and engaging with cartoons.
So let's walk over. Tell us what we're looking at.
Sure. Okay, what we're looking at right now is our new graphic called The True Cost of Coal. It's about mountaintop, removal coal mining, which is the most mechanized version of strip mining, where instead of digging underground or using a little bit of explosives, they are blowing up entire mountains, like entire mountains, to get coal. They blow the mountain up and the top comes down. They fill up the valley and they're creating flat land. And some of the oldest mountain range in the world and one of the most biodiverse places on our planet. So the way that this picture works is that everything on the top part of the image is larger systemic global ideas, sort of abstract about the ideas of what's going on. And the bottom are all local stories told to us from the people that we met on our research trip. Because we didn't make this about our opinions about the issue. To inform it, we did a listening project in Appalachia. We traveled for months and drove around in our rickety bus and spoke to people from the place that is directly affected by this issue and asked them, what is your story? We want to communicate it. So this is a direct sort of line of communication from the people experiencing this issue to all of you. And there's this meta-narrative where all of the plants are along the edge of the poster are all plants that come from Appalachia. They're either medicinal, food, or bioremediating plants, and they're identifiable by their markings because we have someone who's really good at that. And it has five chapters. On the left, chapter one is about the stories of the land, history of Appalachia, how people have been living sustainably there in respect to the earth for hundreds of years before colonization, which are those birds up in that tree, are the colonizer birds coming from Western Europe. And then that transitions us into chapter two, which is about post-colonization, the history of coal mines, the history of how the land was parceled into land deeds. You can see the Virginia State House at the top and the railroad rolling out of it that's crushing homesteaders' lands and issuing deeds. We talk about the life of the coal miner. We talk about the formation of the unions. You can see there's a union battle, the Battle of Blair Mountain, 14,000 people getting together to form a union by force, which is awesome. I mean, think about it, 14,000 people without Facebook. Just saying. At the bottom, of course, we have a celebration scene where we talk about the victories of those unions and what we owe them. Those little flags, you can see a clock with eights and that little medical symbol.
Is that a canary coming out of the mine?
The canary coming out of the coal mine. Yeah, well, actually, there's two mine entrances. On the left, those miners are rushing out to the Battle of Blair Mountain. And on the top right, we see that beefy ant that's coming in, and he's wearing chains on his legs, and behind him is a canary holding a cage. We're speaking about, in that section, divide and conquer tactics used by the coal mines, the coal mine companies, where when unions would gain strength, they would do their best to break them up by violence. Or one example right there is the bringing in of black convict laborers as scabs to try to incite racial conflict within these communities. And you can see that the canary is holding a cage. And the canary in the coal mine, of course, is that canaries are more sensitive. And when you bring them into coal mines, if they die, then you know that you shouldn't go further. Many of the black convict laborers were sent in to dangerous situations before the rest of the coal miners and would indicate when perhaps it was too dangerous to go in. So also the canary is an African bird. Just want to point that out. So, but we also talk about union victories, and we talk about the hard life that many of those union miners had, but the victories, I mean, union miners were some of the loudest in demanding workers' rights, 8-hour day, 40-hour work week, weekend, safety standards. OSHA used to be MSHA. The Occupational Safe and Healthy Health Administration used to be the Miners Safe and Health Administration. It's really neat. And we pay lots of respect to the miners, because in dealing with activism that speaks about resisting coal mining, we have to be very clear that we are not resisting coal miners. They are awesome. They got us so many of our rights. They're some of the most incredible in terms of acts of solidarity historically. Like, we respect them very deeply, and they're the ones that you can see transitioning into Chapter 3 that are the most affected by what is going on. And we chose to represent the miners as a frog. That frog right there, it's called the Dance of Hard Choices. It's four steps displaying what it's like for a miner, because at the mines before, there used to be 200 miners. Now they hire maybe 10 to 12.
Right.
And the economy has bottomed out in this area of the world with so little jobs left in a place that historically has only had jobs available in coal mining. So the people who do have those jobs are in a careful predicament, where in step one, you can see that miner is detonating the mountain that's blowing up above him. In step two, he goes home and he's got pain in his back from his environment, because frogs are indicator species, just like canaries. They get sick before anybody else. And so we chose them to describe the miners. It's got pain in its kidneys, and its little frog is getting black water from the tap. And in step three, they go and get prescription medication and bottled water. And in step four, that coal miner has just a handful of change left and has to go back to work. And that little frog is considering a different route off to the bus stop. Because in this area, for the youth, there is really no option other than get one of those very coveted coal jobs, or perhaps flip burgers if there is somewhere nearby that can, or leave. And so in our activism, you can see this image is dead in center, because there's this funny rift between activists and coal miners, where the coal miners are being told that the environmentalists want your jobs. And the environmentalists come in with their college degrees and they say, like, we know better. You guys are ruining your planet. Do you not know? But the truth is that they know very well. They live there. And imagine what it's like to have to blow up where you're from in order to stay there. I mean, I have no context to be able to understand what they must be feeling, and we probably, most people don't. So we try as hard as we can to emphasize the respect that the coal miners deserve.
So the coal miners, when you finish this, have the community seen what you've done?
We just finished this thing. It got printed hot off the press like 2 days before coming here. This is the grand release.
Okay.
We've been working on it for 2 years, and what's going on this...
2 years?
Yeah. 2 years it took to research it, lay it out, like pick the metaphors, all the images, every single image I could talk about for half an hour.
So how many of you did this? how many of you?
Thank you.
How many of you?
There's a group of about 10 people that went on the research trip, worked on the different stages of the pencil sketch, worked on two people bottom-lined inking it, and I'm one of several people that get the opportunity and the special privilege to communicate the story to people. And we're going on tour in fall. Every spring and fall, we tour all over the country to community centers, colleges, high schools, all over. And we just tell the story. And we're also exercising oral storytelling, which is like an ancient human thing that we've seemed to have forgotten too.
So tell us about the name Beehives. How did you get that? How did you come up with the name for your collective?
Beehive. Yeah, well, we take a lot of inspiration for the way that bees organize themselves. And people will ask us the question, they're like, who's the queen bee? And our response, our very well-informed response, is that there is really only a very few types of bees that have queens. Most beehives don't have queens. In fact, the one in our country that we're so used to that has queens are invasive European honeybees. thank you very much. just going to say it. And we organize ourselves horizontally. So nobody's the boss. We're all the boss. And no one has more power than another, just no matter what their seniority is. And everybody has a chance to say something. And all of our decisions are made a consensus on everybody agreeing all together that whatever decision that we're making is good for the group and not for individuals. And also, none of us get paid. And we're full-time. We only make enough money to feed ourselves and pay our rent.
How do you do that?
We sell posters. We sell posters and we get speaking fees at schools. And that really is that and, like, absolute generosity and kindness of the people that host us. When we go on tour, you know, we ask if someone wants us to come, and they say yes, and they let us stay at their house, and they generally give us a meal. And at the show, we'll pass around a hat and usually make enough to cover the gas that it took to get there. And then the speaking fee goes to paying our rent, and that's it. It's out of kindness and generosity that our organization has been around for 10 years. And we don't get grants.
You've been doing this for 10 years?
Yep. I haven't. I've only been for a year. I'm a newbie.
You're a newbie.
I'm a newbie. There's newbies. I was a wannabe before I was a newbie.
Now you're a newbie.
I am.
So this is a really fascinating idea. So this is an artistic collective, mm-hmm. a revolutionary artistic collective, mm-hmm. telling the stories of people's struggles across the globe.
Yeah. It's we try to
embed yourself in the people and then tell the stories.
We try to be a lens of communication, because one of the things that's so intense in our culture and our world is misinformation and, like, historical amnesia, where we all, like, don't talk about the history that led up to what's going on in our world. And for some reason, we tend to not know what's happening to people in other places. And coming from a place of privilege, like having the ability to run around to do activism, because I'm 20-something and I don't have kids and I don't mind wearing ratty clothes. And if I can help in some way, this seems like a really good way to put my energy. And so we try to communicate stories where there maybe isn't a venue to do so. Because a lot of times history is told by the point of view of the person who won.
This is great.
Yeah, you're great.
Good to meet you.
Lovely to meet you, too.
Thank you so much. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Justin Levy and Christina Arison. We're engineered by Brian Boone. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, Gay Pinder, and Marianne Amos. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again and podcast any of our past shows, hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ was formed in 1936 to help people during the Great Depression. And over 70 years later, they're still here to help people during difficult times. More information is available at mecu.com.